Richie Neal, always great to talk to my congressman from Massachusetts' 1st District, a man who I have immense respect for. We're so lucky to have you. I wanted to ask you, you are a presidential history buff, and a new book, Fire and Fury, in which all kinds of hell broke loose. What do you make of it?
Well, I think that there were individuals in the president's inner circle who were making disparaging comments about him, anticipating that they would not see the light of day. And in one case, one individual, one of the architects of his successful election was Steve Bannon, who has come to repudiate many of the members of the administration who advised the president. And there is no question that within the administration, that even if you talk to members of that administration, there's a lot of eye-rolling that goes on. And when you talk to Republicans in the House, there's a lot of eye-rolling that goes on when they talk about some of the things that the president has said. So I think he felt compelled after the manner in which this book was published. In fact, I must tell you that the author must have been delighted that the president decided to seek a restraining order to keep the book from actually being published, which I think is something that only heightened the public's interest in it. But at the same time, there were members of that administration who were quoted accurately, just believing that there would never be any attribution. And I think that in this instance, the administration has tried very hard over the weekend, as I mentioned a moment ago, by announcing through the president himself that not only is he stable, but he's a genius. That for me is pretty far-fetched. And I think that the idea that that would even have to be suggested ought to be a troubling feature of the administration.
We're getting a lot of mail saying 25th Amendment, he's not stable. The principal officers of the cabinet ought to get together and write him out. Of course, nothing like that's going to happen.
Yeah, I think you're correct. I don't see that happening as well. And I think one of the things you have to keep in mind here is that I think until Republicans in the House and the Senate determine that they're not going to put up with this anymore, I think you're going to see us continue down the same route. And of course, they're concerned that they would have a primary, because as you know, the president still polls fairly well with the Republican base across the country, which tends to be concentrated, as you know, in red states. And many of those individuals are reluctant or reticent about offering any sort of challenge to the president verbally or legislatively, because they feel that it might engender then a Republican primary opponent. The difficulty with that is that even though they think he's mistaken on many issues, as you know from Mitch McConnell on down, they tend to, in the end, surrender or go along with him.
Right. And it's quite simple when it comes to profiles and courage. Who's going to be the profile and courage in the Republican Party who say, hey, this just ain't right, and we've got to put a stop to this, and it's very dangerous? To which I ask you the idea of whether or not you think that this guy, Trump, is going to be around for a full term.
I mean, at the moment, I think he is. I don't see any movement on the part of Republicans who constitute a majority in the House and the Senate. And recall that you would also need 2/3 of the House and 2/3 of the Senate down the road for any further consideration of removal. So I don't see that happening. But I do think the opportunity exists that if we were to win in the fall, then I think that we could certainly change the tone of the national debate, and I think we could challenge many of the things that have been suggested, including health care and on the tax bill.
Okay, so I want to switch gears here and go to North Korea. It would appear that there is now a developing relationship between North and South Korea. Is this a good sign, or is the president of the United States somehow being shoved aside?
Well, I think it's very clear that what the North Koreans are attempting to do is to divide the South Koreans from their historic or 70-year alliance with the United States. And I think that the example of the Olympics is one that provided an opportunity for the two sides to meet. Now, and although they did meet yesterday, certainly the opening statements from the North were equally belligerent. And so I anticipate that using the Chinese to bring them to the bargaining table should continue to be an option for us. And I think also slowing down some of the bellicose rhetoric that has surrounded this discussion would be helpful. And I think that there are some examples across the globe where we might be able to address this issue with some help from third parties. But clearly, I think the polarization and the use of incendiary rhetoric is not helpful to bringing the parties to an accommodation. And the Olympics do provide an opportunity at least for the optics to improve, and I'm hopeful that we can build upon that.
I keep thinking of ping-pong diplomacy and the opening to the Chinese.
That's a thought that comes to mind for me as well. And, you know, Richard Nixon made a career largely based on anti-communism. And in a lot of ways, if a Democrat had done what he had done by going to China, it would have been the howls that would have come from the far right in America that had gone all the way back to their accusations against Truman, and that we had been soft on communism, and that was the reason that China was lost. But the truth is that Richard Nixon is the one that capitalized upon those career opportunities and then made the determination to go to China, which in retrospect is seen as one of his great foreign policy accomplishments.
Let's talk a little bit, if we can, Richie Neal, about DACA. I have a theory on this, and for whatever it's worth, that the American people were underestimated in this whole debate, that they thought it wasn't fair to send these kids back who were not in the country on their own doing, by their own doing, and therefore they were severely underestimated. The anti-immigration people thought this was a good way to rile up the base. What do you make of that?
I think there's a great streak that de Tocqueville noted of humanitarianism that runs through the American people. There is, despite the differences that we have, a great sense of kindness. And I think when you look at some of those who came under the auspices of DACA, they are now in their 30s and their 40s. And they came here under a legitimate purpose, that in the sense that they didn't wake up one day and say that they were going to walk across the borders. Their parents brought them here. And they have grown up in the American culture. They've become part of the American culture. And economically, they're a very important part of the American system. And I think this notion that you're going to easily shepherd them back has been met by popular opinion that says, no, let's take the deep breath. Let's figure out how to allow them to stay. And as recently as yesterday, the president indicated in his comments that he thought that this might be a pivot to a big immigration bill, which is really what the country needs. And this piecemeal prospect that we have of fixing this part of immigration or fixing that part has really not gone very well. And I've been part of a couple of major immigration reform measures that passed here. They worked very well. And I hope that we should find an opportunity here on DACA to maybe get us into a better space for the purpose of doing widespread immigration reform.
So what accounts for this change? He says, I'll take the heat. Is it that he sees the wave coming in the 2018 election?
I think he wants to appear bipartisan, and I think that he wants to appear less than heavy-handed on this issue. You know, when you consider that it was so popular for him in the primary season, recall that that's still a very small slice of Americana. And I think that many employers, for example, across the country have said to him time and again, and many of the farm states as well, that they depend now on this supply of immigrant labor. And across the country, whether it's the meatpacking houses of the Midwest or whether it's those who do restaurant work across the country, these are individuals who have made their way into the American economy, and now they're an important part of it. So I think that, you know, that we still lift the lamp and light of liberty in the world. And I think that there are still many people across the globe that are mesmerized by that prospect, and they want to be part of America as well. And the other point that I would make, they want to make America great, too.
It's always great to talk to our friend Richie Neal of Massachusetts 1st District, my district. Congressman, I'm proud of you. In office since 1989. When we come back the next time, I have a whole bunch of stuff I want to get done, okay?
Happy to talk with you.